Hello, my friend. Welcome to the Peaceful Soul Podcast, conversations and meditations to help you live a more calm and peaceful life. I'm your host, Alicia Lynn Diaz, Ayurvedic health practitioner, transformational healer, meditation mentor, and devotional singer. And over the last decade and a half, I've devoted my time, energy, effort, experience, and education to creating courses, seminars, retreats, programs that have been able to support thousands of people to transform their health, to heal their emotions, to upgrade their mind, and to live a really fulfilled life. And so now I'm being called to share this wisdom in a more open source format so it can reach more of you. And I truly believe that a peaceful world begins with cultivating inner peace inside each and every one of us, and that together we can all rise and bring more harmony to the world at large. So in today's episode, I want to dive into this conversation of emotional intelligence, your EQ instead of your IQ, right? Because so much of our society puts emphasis on how smart or intelligent we are, if we got good grades, if we're doing XYZ successful thing that puts me into some kind of exalted pedestal state that I'm striving to get to, right? And so there's this total imbalance of our EQ, our emotional intelligence. And there are just some incredibly potent ways that we can boost our EQ and inherently be able to live a more authentic, connected, deliberate life and really bring our gifts to the world and not burn out and not have conflict in our relationships. Like, why is it important to have emotional intelligence, right? Like, when the emotions are blocked or when there's repressed emotion, it does a number of terrible things in your life and in your body. I'm going to talk today about the Ayurvedic perspective on emotions and emotional stagnation and how that affects your body and your physiology. It puts you into these fight or flight stress patterns and how that cascades and negatively impacts your health. And it also negatively impacts your mind. It doesn't allow you to have clear communication. You end up being frustrated, stuck, stagnant in your work, in your relationships, not really knowing what is true to you. These emotions act as veils to us seeing what is most true for us. And so I want to kind of peel back some of the layers here today and dive into this topic of emotional intelligence so that you can understand some ways to transform negative emotions, how to really tangibly create that inner peace within that we've been talking about, and how to just optimize your health and your life on all levels through this medium of increasing your EQ. So I'm going to play a little bit of music here, set the mood, and then we'll dive right into today's topic. Also, I would so love your support with this podcast. Please consider leaving a 5-star review and sharing it with your friends. You can also hit the subscribe button to make sure you get notifications when I release the episodes. And also consider donating to support this podcast and the Peaceful World Movement at alicialyndiaz.com/donate. Heard the term emotion is energy in motion. So when you repress an emotion, you stop the energy movement that needs to be always circulating and happening. You stop that energy movement dead in its tracks, and it clogs the pathways to health and to inner and outer freedom. So how does this play out, or how do you notice this happening in your life? What do you do when you feel sad or depressed or frustrated, angry or fearful? What's your response? Do you avoid it? Do you try to cheer yourself up and focus on something more positive? Do you or others around you make you feel wrong or bad for feeling a certain way? What if you didn't have to feel or be a certain way in order to be loved and accepted? Would that lift a weight off your shoulders? So simply put, repressing emotion causes disease in the body, dis-ease in the body, and effectively getting in touch with releasing emotion, feeling emotion, expressing emotion creates room for healing. And this is where this EQ or emotional intelligence comes into play. There's an ancient Ayurvedic sutra that says, Irsha krodha bhaya shoka manasya me pravarta te. This is the definition of mental ama according to Ayurveda. Mental ama means, ama means toxicity. So there are physical toxins that are a result of poor digestion in the gut. And then there are mental toxins that are clogging the subtle channels of the body and suppressing your digestive and metabolic fire, your digestive and metabolic abilities. And so Irsha, Krodha, Bhaya, Shoka are referring to envy, attachment, this craving and aversion, the wanting for something and longing for something, and also the aversion for pushing something away that you don't want. Envy, anger, and anger shows up in all types of ways. Frustration, passive aggressiveness, even those subtle ways. Irsha, Krodha, Bhaya, Shoka. Bhaya is fear, and fear in all its forms. Fear can show up in avoidance. Fear can show up in kind of paralysis or even numbness. Irsha, Krodha, Bhaya, Shoka. Shoka is grief. And there's actually an herb in Ayurveda called Ashoka, which means non-grief. And it's actually an herb that helps support this bodily intelligence of releasing grief out of the cellular, just out of the cells, which is so beautiful. And I've worked with that herb quite a lot. It's pretty profound. Anyway, that's just a side note. So all of these different emotions, we can go into the emotions in more detail. But for now, I want to kind of look at why and how we develop our emotional intelligence. So, of course, we develop our intelligences, our emotional intelligence, the way that we cope with our thoughts, feelings, emotions in the outside world in our developmental years. So particularly, the subconscious mind is developed in the first 7 years of life, according to Ayurveda. So these different stages, of course, it extends beyond that. But the deepest recesses of the subconscious mind, the places that your immediate kind of knee-jerk reactions and initial imprint of how you experience the world around you and how you digest your experience of the world around you, that foundation is really laid in those first 7 years. And so, you know, you can think back to when you were a child, how did you, one, witness your caretakers dealing with their emotions? Because we learn through that energetic kind of imprint of our role models. How did you experience your caretakers interacting with their emotions? And then two, how did your caretakers respond to you when you had emotions. For example, when you cried, were you scolded? Were you told to toughen up, you're okay, you know, get over it kind of thing? Were you shamed in any way for crying? Were you told that big girls or big boys don't cry type of thing, where you then learned in some capacity that it's not safe to cry, I shouldn't be crying, right? You essentially create a rift in your own trusting of your intelligence, your inner wisdom. It creates a rift where you essentially start to distrust your own signal because you've been given this feedback from the people that are responsible for your entire life and well-being. Without them, you would die. So you put so much as a child onto the caretakers in terms of like, this is life or death. So they are the ones that dictate what is right or wrong or what I should or shouldn't be feeling, of course. And if you disagree, right, there's this inbred experience that we have. If we disagree with that authority, then there's the innate fear of being ostracized from the clan. And if I'm ostracized from the clan, I can't survive on my own. So these interconnections, and that's not quite the right what I was looking for, these just these imprints are crafted in such a, like, they are wired into our deepest sense of survival. So it's no wonder that we as a society are, or have been unable to, you know, that we as a society are generally emotionally repressed, right? This is why this topic is so needed. And I'm sure that if you're listening to this podcast, you've been well aware of this, and I hope that I have some things that really shed some new light and some new tangible ways that you can upgrade your own relationship with your emotions and have more peaceful interactions with the people around you and with yourself and things like that and with your health. But yeah, what else happens? So you're a little kid and you cry, and then a parent or guardian or caretaker, you know, scolds you for that or tells you that that's bad or wrong. And then you start to learn that you shouldn't do that. And then you start swallowing your tears. Or one of the things that I know for me personally was with the emotion of anger. I never remember seeing either one of my parents angry, like, my entire life. And the only time I experienced anger were in extremely traumatic, violent, abusive situations. And so I repressed my own feelings of anger and unconsciously labeled them to be bad because I only saw anger projected outward in a violent way. And so I didn't know that there was even, I never learned from any role model that there was a healthy way to feel, experience, or deal with anger. And so anytime I felt anger bubble up, I would immediately be like, oh, no, like, you're not an angry person. If you're an angry person, you're like that person that was very, very harmful. Like, you're not that. And so I disowned that part of myself for many, many years until it bubbled up to the surface and I learned how to work with it in such a way that, this brings us to a very important point. There are two ways to experience your emotions. One, with total self-responsibility as a somatic experience in your body. Or two, a projected outward, like, throwing of a dart towards someone else. This is not the technical term, very technical term. a projection outward or a self-responsible inner experience. And obviously, you could see how projecting the emotions outward, blaming another person or saying, you know, your anger being projected towards someone, like is what I witnessed, that could be violent and hurtful and very painful. But that the essence of the energy itself isn't bad or wrong or negative. The emotions are essentially neutral. It's more how we experience them and what we do with them and the meaning that we make of them, which is a whole nother rabbit hole in and of itself. But I'll talk about that for a moment, because one of the amazing people that I interviewed in the Soul of Healing Summit shared about the physiology, the chemical experience of an emotion in our body only lasting, if I'm quoting this correctly, I think 30 seconds. It might have been less than 30 seconds, but I'll just say 30 seconds. That the neurochemical experience of an emotion only lasts 30 seconds. But we create meaning out of when we feel an emotion, our mind attaches a thought to it. And then the thought elicits another chemical response. And so it creates this feedback loop that can cause that emotion to feel like never ending. And what also happens is that we're so afraid to feel our emotions because of our associations with them and how we've been trained and our imprints around emotions and just our general societal agreement that says you should to be proper, you know, person in society or to be strong or to be whatever, you should essentially repress your emotions is kind of the unsaid agreement that we have as a twisted human society in a lot of ways, says that you shouldn't feel that. So we just avoid feeling it fully. And that's the most dangerous of all, is that we avoid feeling it fully. And then it just ends up being this pervasive shadow, this like poison that just seeps in. And our thoughts and feelings go unconscious to us, and they just happen in the background, that same feedback loop. Or we actually allow ourselves to fully feel it, and we create the feedback loop with our mind. If you can, this is actually where the liberation comes in. If you can allow yourself to experience an emotion fully and completely, to be courageous enough to feel it without attaching a mental label or meaning to it, it will take its course through your body and dissipate out. It's only when we bury it and try to avoid it or feed it with mental loops that it controls us and has a grip over us and can create a lot of detriment in our physiology as well. So what does that look like? And what does that feel like? And what does that mean in actual everyday existence? Well, you can ask yourself a few questions to just kind of tune in to how this would work for you. Okay, so first, what are just some signs that you might be repressing an emotion? What would this look like if you're to take this into your own self-awareness and just reflect? So some signs that you may be repressing emotion is that when you feel down and someone asks you if you're okay, like you got bad news, or you're worried about something, or you feel scared, or various things, and someone asks you if you're okay, you kind of just shrug your shoulders and say, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm good. No big deal, right? And you just kind of carry on about your business. I'm not suggesting that you divulge, you know, every bit of your most vulnerable emotions to a stranger or to someone who asks you that, right? But there's a difference between being self-aware and conscious about what you're experiencing and how you go about communicating that, and if your communication is an avoidance or not. Another sign could be that you actually do know or remember that you've had some type of emotional or physical abuse in the past, but you've hardly ever shared it with anyone, and even the thought of it still brings you pain. Another sign could be when you feel emotional in any way, you, instead of feeling the emotion, if you have something that you feel under the surface, you just work harder, you work out more, you keep yourself more busy, you self-medicate, or you do anything that you can to kind of take your mind off it. Read, watch movies, ingest media, ingest substances, those types of things. Those are obviously like more obvious ones. Some more subtle possibilities are, or signs, is perhaps you've been suffering from a chronic illness or pain, and despite years of treatment or trying to work even with a lot of holistic medicine, nothing seems to make it better. That's usually a sign that there's a subtle channel in the body that's clogged with this mental ama, this mental emotional ama or toxicity, and that needs to be properly digested. I'll talk about more about that in just a moment. Some other subtle signs are you have recurring nightmares or uncomfortable dreams, or you just feel tired and lethargic even when you've had enough sleep, or your feelings get in the way of you thinking clearly on a regular basis. So these are just some ideas and some signs. There might be more signs that you notice if you're obviously on this path of self-awareness with me, and you know, you're probably already on your spiritual journey, but maybe these triggered some reflections for you to get even more wide-eyed curious about yourself. And that's another thing, is there's a slippery slope with this conversation around emotional intelligence, and a lot of spiritual seekers too, and highly sensitive people and empaths. There's almost this assumption that there should be some kind of perfection. Like, I shouldn't feel that way if I'm spiritual, right? Like, I shouldn't feel anger towards someone. It's like, you can be authentic in your emotion, and then you can also do the inner work and not bypass it, not just do a spiritual bypass and say like, oh, divine love is all that there really is, so I'm just going to, you know, focus on that and just disown my holy rage. And it's like, wow, there's actually wisdom in that rage, and you should totally give yourself permission to feel, express, and inquire without guilting and shaming yourself of why that rage is there, because likely it's not just the energy that's there, but there may actually be, it's often a signpost that something is off in your life. Just as an example, right? There's always wisdom. And there's always an opportunity for us to get curious about ourselves, to let go of the extra layers of guilt or shame, shaming yourself for feeling a certain way. It's just like, okay, if I just actually embraced this idea of divine love and held myself in unconditional acceptance right now, and instead of make myself wrong for feeling angry or sad or whatever, I actually give myself permission to just be seen and heard by myself. What a powerful healing. That's all the child wanted anyway, was just to be held, was just to be accepted, was just to be okay, was just to be enough. The waves of emotions ebb and flow like the tides in the ocean. This is a part of our human experience. You are not the waves in the ocean. You are the vastness of the sea. So while you don't have to identify with the fluctuations, they are still a part of you. And in these human bodies, it's like a piano. Instead of just learning how to play three little keys in the center of the piano, you want to learn how to play the fullness of the instrument. And your feelings and emotions are part of that fullness. And when you learn how to play and be in the surrender to the flow, while also not being limited by the identity of that ebb and flow, you live a more fulfilled and peaceful life. That doesn't mean you feel peace as an emotion all the time, or that peace means not experiencing painful emotions. No, it's just connecting with that deep part inside of you that simultaneously exists no matter what the fluctuations are on the surface. But spending time to commune with that depth of the vastness of your soul, while simultaneously honoring that the vastness of the infinite energy and soul that you are is also in a human form with its inherent experiences and so-called limitations, then we can honor the totality of our existence here. And we can honor the body enough to feel and allow the emotions to move through without trapping them. So love the body enough to move those energies through so that they don't kink the hose of your nadis, your subtle energy meridians, and constrict the energy so that it stops flowing, so that energy and blood flow and prana, life force, stops going to a certain place, and then that creates dis-ease. Those places that the energy constricts because of repressed emotion is where toxicity accumulates and the disease process unfolds. Organ systems, bodily tissues, you name it. So a couple questions to ask yourself. This will just help you evaluate your relationship to emotion. Am I secretly afraid of revealing my true feelings to others? Do I overexpress emotion to get attention and love? Some people adapt that strategy unconsciously. So there's the overexpression and the underexpression. Those are two polarities on that spectrum. But are you embarrassed or ashamed about your emotions or about a past experience or trauma that happened to you? And the last question for today is just, am I harboring resentment towards anyone who has wronged me in the past? Okay, maybe just a few more. They're coming to me. Am I harboring guilt about anything that I've done or has happened in my past? is there someone in my past that I have not forgiven? And remember, forgiveness is not for the other person. Forgiveness is for you. Forgiveness is so that you don't hold on to the poison of resentment in your body. It doesn't mean that you're saying it's okay for what happened. It's for you. And I mean, you can also use forgiveness in that way. But yeah, is there someone or some situation in the past that you haven't forgiven? Is there a version of yourself from the past that you have not forgiven? Are you afraid? You can ask yourself, am I afraid I will lose love if I express how I truly feel? Remember, if you really do lose love because of your expression, then it's not true love. It's conditional love. Anyone in your life should accept you fully, wholeheartedly, unconditionally, no matter what your experience is. If you have to trade your authenticity for love in any capacity, whether that be your career, you name it, if you have to trade your authenticity for acceptance from another, that's not true love, and that will create a lot of dissonance in your entire being. And maybe the last question here is just, am I constantly in fear and worry about what the future will bring? When a deer is out in nature and gets chased by a predator, it has fear stress hormones like cortisol, epinephrine running through its, just streaming through its body to help it run as fast as possible to get away. That's part of the fight or flight response, right? The fear response, that sympathetic nervous system response. What the deer does then is, once the chase is over and they survived, they shake. I don't know if this is just deer or if it's a lot of different animals that, you know, this is an effect in the wild, but they shake. They get it all out. And then they just return back to their peaceful grazing, right? And their present awareness. Us as humans, we create this constant cascade of stress hormones in our blood just by our thoughts. There's not even a real threat because the future isn't happening yet. It's only right now. And if you are sheltered and fed and essentially safe right now, then there's no use. It's a waste of your life force, your time and energy to be in constant fear and worry about what the future will bring. And it's also nothing to be ashamed about. That's very real for us as humans, because our brains do have the ability to cognize abstraction, like past and future. However, when a fear comes up, I encourage you to hold yourself, be present with it, bring your full awareness to it, feel it fully, and then shake it off so that you can just come back to the present moment unscathed without the constant stress hormones wrecking havoc in your body. So I want to walk you through a little practice that you can use right now to help you do that with the fear, with the stress, or really with any emotion that comes up. And I'll walk you through that. And this is a big takeaway. And then we'll wrap up for today with some more beautiful meditative music. Okay. So when you notice that you're having a fear response, for example, and you can use this with any emotion at all, So no matter what the emotion, these steps are the same. Step one is self-awareness. When you sense an emotion bubbling to the surface, really you have a few choices. Some of the choices you've been making have been unconscious. Avoidance and distraction, projecting it onto someone else, resisting it, shaming yourself for having it, spiraling out and allowing it to control you for a while or indefinitely, letting it paralyze you into numbness. Those are all an option, right? But step one is self-awareness, to recognize that you're feeling off, you feel an emotion coming to the surface, and you have the option to feel it, release it, come back to your center. To feel it, release it, and come back to your center. To feel it, release it, and come back to your center. So self-awareness is key. Now, even if you feel a little bit numb or frozen or a little paralyzed, you can still sense the emotion. You might not be able to feel the sadness or the emotion that's hiding under the obvious emotion. So like if you can recognize that you feel fear, there might actually just be grief under that, right? Or sadness under that. Or you might feel numb and be like, I feel off, but I don't know what emotion I'm feeling. I know for me, for years, for the longest time, decades, whenever I felt anger, it would just turn into paralysis. And I would feel this experience like, I don't know what I'm feeling. And step one with self-awareness is that's okay. You can still just acknowledge that you don't know what you're feeling. And then you can just sit with it. And you might say out loud, oh, you know what? I can't feel it, but I sense that there's sadness under there. Or I sense that there's anger and sadness under there. It doesn't have to be just one. Again, step one, awareness. You don't have to be able to label it or identify it, but it helps if you can in this moment. And you can just acknowledge to yourself that what you sense without actually having to feel the whole thing. And step two, so I am going to give you this in kind of like a four-step process, but there's a few different iterations of this. So I'm going to give you these four steps and then I'm going to kind of give you another possibility. But the second step, so you just have self-awareness. Step two is to pause and breathe and turn up the volume if needed and if it feels supportive for you. And it's okay, you can stop. This is kind of the extra added thing I was going to say after the four, but basically your self-awareness is enough to just sit with yourself and be with yourself in a radically self-accepting, unconditionally loving state. You can just hold yourself right there and just witness. When I say witness, when you witness your emotions, it gives you a little bit of space from them. You kind of take a back seat, kind of sit back into your soul, and then you witness the emotions. Even if you can feel them, you're still watching the fluctuation. You're watching the thoughts in your mind. You're watching the emotions as if you are in a movie theater watching the screen. And that's kind of like a meditative practice. But that's one that's very, very effective. Or if you feel like that emotion is really ripe, you can turn up the volume. That's why I say, if it's necessary and it feels like it's going to serve you. Step two would be to pause and breathe and turn up the volume. So just take a few deep breaths. You've had self-awareness. You recognize what's happening, that you're, what you're experiencing. You don't even have to put that exact label, just be with it. And then imagine that you can turn up the dial on your feeling as if turning up the volume on your stereo. You can just use your mind to imagine turning up that dial, and it will just, and allow the emotion to come to the surface and blossom. Again, if it's ripe, you can turn up the volume. Step three, watch and witness. So this is continuing. So you can watch and witness without turning up the volume, or you can just turn up the volume and then really witness, feel it, breathe it, make sure that you're breathing into your belly, that your breath doesn't become shallow. If you've practiced yoga or pranayama before, you can engage a little bit of that ujjayi breath, which is just lightly constricting the back of your throat to get your breath moving consistently and fully. And just doing that brings prana into your body and kind of just helps the pathways widen, dilate, so that the emotion can be felt and moved through. So be the witness, no judgment, allow yourself to feel it, hold it with compassion, just like you would a child. You can use ujjayi breath if that feels good, but at some point you're just going to let it go. Again, ujjayi breath is kind of like the Darth Vader breath, or just like you're trying to fog up a mirror, but your lips stay closed. And that just like helps you really stay connected to the sound of your breath. And just hold yourself with compassion, no shaming, no making wrong, just unconditional love and compassion. As you watch and witness without judgment, with that presence and compassion, the flower of that emotion will bloom and then eventually just wither away. When you think of the cycles of life, when that flower comes into full bloom, it blooms all the way open and then the petals fall and it withers away. You may have tears. You may need to release the emotion through sound or body movement, but ultimately it will pass. So that's steps 1, 2, and 3 so far. Of course, you can do it without turning up the volume. This isn't about force. This is about sensing if this is a ripe emotion. So you want to start with self-awareness, pause, be with yourself, turn up the volume, watch and witness. Witness as that flower comes into bloom and releases. And then step 4 is simply aftercare. After an emotional release, it's really important to be gentle with yourself, gentle with your mind, gentle with your body, gentle with your nervous system. This is where integration occurs. So you might want the embrace of a loved one and be snuggled and held, or you might want to be alone for a little while and journal. You might want to sip hot tea. You might want to take a warm bath. But this is an important part of the repatterning and the just emotional experience, is to just be really gentle with your nervous system after that. And you have these 4 steps. You can break them into steps, but, or you can just keep in your mind the metaphor of the witness, or the metaphor of the flower coming into bloom. I kind of broke it down a little bit more detail, which could all be summed up with imagining that you're watching the sunrise or the sunset, or imagine that you're watching this flower come into bloom. When I was in Ayurveda school with my beloved mentor and teacher, Dr. Vasant Ladd, he would use this all the time and tell us that just let the emotions come, bloom like the flower, you're a delicate flower, and then they will fade. And I used to sit with that and I'd be like, what the heck is he talking about? Like when I would feel really intense, I'd be like, I felt so soothed when he would tell me about it. But then when I was alone and home and I just felt agitated and I felt afraid and I didn't know what I felt and I felt numb and paralyzed and confused and overwhelmed. And I'd be like, what the hell was this flower thing he was talking about? And I just remember one night, I just had like my salt lamp or some candles on and I was just like so agitated in my mind. And this is probably the first time I actually practiced this technique that I'm sharing with you, but I just sat on this oversized chair futon thing in the corner of the living room and I was just like kind of frustrated. Like I was like, fine, I'm just gonna try this stupid flower thing and see if it works, but I don't even know what I'm feeling and I just feel so overwhelmed. And I sat there almost like a little bit pouty, you know, like with my arms crossed and I was just like, I don't know what's going on, but I was just so agitated. There was like nothing else that I could do. Like I couldn't even avoid it. And so I just sat there and I was imagining the flower blooming in me. And I didn't even have to turn the volume knob. It just happened all by itself. And I was so afraid to cry for whatever reason. But I just, all of these waves and waves and waves. And there was like multiple waves of emotion that came out through my tears. And I knew that it wasn't a negative feedback loop because as a wave came out, it was like it was all releasing something different. It wasn't just the same thought perpetuating an emotion. It was like one wave of the ocean was this, and then the next wave was like all this stuff was leaving, and it was just like this intelligence of the vastness of the ocean moving through me, and it was just like, and then at the end of it, and then it started getting really intense and I was kind of afraid, but I was already on a roll. So I just kept crying bigger. And on the other side of that, I just kind of sat there feeling a little tender, but not really thinking about anything and not really, almost being a little bit bewildered because I had entered into this uncharted territory of maybe my first real experience of peace on the other side of that. Wow. I haven't thought about that memory in a long time, but that was my first time really utilizing the what I laid out for you today. And since then, it has been a practice, a continual practice of surrendering into that emotion and trusting the waves of my existence while simultaneously reconnecting with that depth of the ocean that we all really are, the peace and the depth and the vastness of the ocean. The more you can commune with that deep, deep, deep down part of you that always knows on some level everything's going to be okay, the less the ripples, the further away those ripples feel on the surface of the water. So, yeah. So I hope that that practice serves you. I'm just so grateful to be here in this format, in this podcast with you. I hope this was valuable for you. If you have any questions, you can always email me at hello@aliciahlyndiaz.com. I think there might even be a way on this platform to somehow leave a voice memo. I haven't figured that out yet, but that's really cool. So if you want any questions answered on the show and topics that I can speak directly to your personal experience, I would just so love that. I love the engagement and the interaction. So thank you so much for joining me here. As you integrate this topic right now, I'm just going to play another excerpt of a song from one of my favorite artists, and we'll close out the show for today. And I'm sending you so much love and blessings. Om Shanti. Peace. much for joining me today. I hope today's message and practice nourish your soul and help you feel more calm and peace within. Please support this podcast by leaving a 5-star review and sharing it with your loved ones. Also hit that subscribe button. We have some amazing content and conversations in store for you, so I don't want you to miss out on any of that. And remember, peaceful souls create a peaceful world. Please consider donating to support this podcast and join me in the Peaceful World movement at alishalyndiaz.com/donate. I give away special gifts and courses to my donors. I want to point you to the artist's website, yaimamusic.com. I'm so grateful to be able to share this beautiful, soulful talent with you. So thank you so much, Yaima. And again, you can visit yaimamusic.com and also more details in the show notes. Lots of love. Om Shanti. Blessings. Mi corpo sereno e cuore.